From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Karma and Reincarnation with Barbara Martin and Dimitri Boridis. And then we'll also have a Reincarnation Instapoll up for you. As a matter of fact, you can go there now and start voting. It's in our highlighted carousel. In Indonesia, the death toll from a tsunami and a volcano rose to more than 340 already, as more victims of Indonesia's double disasters were found, and an official said a warning system installed after that deadly ocean wave in 2004 that killed hundreds of thousands of people had broken from a lack of maintenance. Hundreds still missing after Monday's tsunami struck a remote island. Bank of America Corporation is scheduled to meet Thursday with state officials investigating allegations that the bank rushed the foreclosure process without properly reviewing documents. Attorneys general in all 50 states are jointly investigating whether paperwork and legal procedures were handled properly in hundreds of thousands of cases. Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden threatens in a new audio tape to kill French citizens to avenge their country's support for the U.S.-led war in Afghanistan and a new law that will ban face-covering Muslim veils. In the tape obtained by satellite television station Al Jazeera and then posted on its website, bin Laden said France was aiding the Americans in the killing of Muslim women and children in an apparent reference to the war in Afghanistan. Doug Hagman with us here, Homeland Security U.S. Doug, he continues to lift his head. I thought he was dead.
Well, you know what? Pardon my skepticism here, George, but I think we're seeing a pattern much akin to the old arcade game Whack-A-Mole. Just when you think it can't get any more ludicrous, another message comes out. We see this message.
And they're timely, so they sound like, you know, if it's his voice, it's obviously, you know, being done right now.
Well, and there's no way to really authenticate this without really seeing a video to correspond with the audio. We haven't seen video for several years. And if you look at what's going on in France right now, where you've got 25% of the gas stations dry, you've got the blockade of airports, you've got civil unrest over Sarkozy's very unpopular pension reform, it's interesting that we all of a sudden see this message coming out from bin Laden, when in fact France only has 3,750 troops in Afghanistan, and this law banning the burqa won't be taking effect until April. So we have to look at this, I think, through the lens of the globalist agenda as opposed to one of the counter-terrorist agenda.
Doug, I think he's alive. I think he's in Pakistan, and I don't think we want to go get him.
Could be, George. I want to see proof of life. If he is indeed alive, Pakistan would be area number one, perhaps Iran area number two. Indeed, I think time will tell.
Okay, my friend. Doug Hagman, his website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Those of you in New York, New York City residents who want to own a gun may soon be denied permits if they are litter bugs, if they are bad drivers, or if they have fallen behind on a few bills. Can you believe this? Under a proposed revision to the police department's handgun, rifle, and shotgun permit procedures, NYPD can reject gun license applicants for a number of reasons. If they have been arrested or convicted of almost any violation in any state, having a poor driving history, having been fired for circumstances that demonstrate lack of good judgment, having failed to pay legally required debts, being deemed to lack good moral character, or if any other information demonstrates other good cause for denial of the permit, they won't let you have one. Just over half of the private small company executives expect employees to steal something of value within the next year, nearly double the rate who have actually experienced such loss in the last 5 years, according to a new survey. Some 54% of those surveyed said they expected employees to steal company funds, equipment, inventory, or merchandise over the next year. Just 30% have actually experienced such theft in the last 5 years. By the way, there goes producer Tom Danheiser with a handful of paper towels to his car. NASA is planning a mission to send a manned spacecraft on a one-way trip to permanently settle on other planets. It's an ambitious idea known as the 100 Years Starship, and would send astronauts to colonize planets like Mars, knowing that they would never come home. Well, we're going home to Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, I don't think I'd want to be one of those astronauts.
Oh, come on. It's perfectly made for you and Coast and me.
I'm not, what do you mean, not coming home?
Look, you haven't thought about this. This is obviously not serious, but it's an incredibly interesting idea to get people to think outside the box. Let me tell you what the first thing you would do.
All right.
You'd set up a television feed. You do like, what was that show, that movie, Truman Show?
The Truman Show.
You would have a daily live feed all over the world from these people setting up camp, living off the land, finding ancient ruins, opening libraries. Do you begin to get the picture?
Sponsored by some huge company.
Oh, it would even have to be a huge company. You know, Google, the Google guy says in the piece, you know, when he was told by Pete Warden, you know, it's going to cost about $10 billion, he says, well, if you get it down to two, we might be interested. The point is, the numbers don't work out. It is not cheaper to send someone on a one-way trip than to send them with a spaceship to bring them home. That's the ultimate fallacy. And NASA's not doing this. This is some private money with the hope by Warden that NASA will put like $100,000, which is, you know, coffee money for a week at NASA,
right,
into the pot. But the idea in this disclosure epic, we're in the middle of disclosure. There's all kinds of cool stuff going on. Just watch the event. Oh, my God. I mean, the big reveal on Monday night for the event is who the aliens really are and where they come from.
Well, I'm still telling you, Richard, I wouldn't go on a one-way trip.
Even if you had your own live television show nightly all over the planet? Because let me tell you what would happen to
you. I've got my own live radio show all over the planet. Why would I want to go to Mars and not come back?
Television.
No,
and
like that.
Look, wait, what's there on Mars? Now, here's the MacGuffin. Obviously, if someone tried to pull a stunt like this, what would all those people back on Earth be focused on doing?
What? You tell me.
Getting a rescue mission. Getting governments to send the ship to bring them home.
Take 2 or 3 years to get there.
So what? No, actually, it takes about 9 months.
9 months.
Well, which you gotta, is less, you by the way, than
build
the
a craft to get there. You got to build the craft to go get them.
Well, no. Once you have built the spacecraft to go, you also have the technology. I mean, this is all farce. It's not real. It's a exquisite PR stunt to get people watching this, listening to our show tonight, watching television, to think about the out-of-the-box idea of how do you get colonization of Mars, other planets started, and the thinking process among those that might have to go to leave the Earth, George, because maybe Earth is not going to be a nice place for people.
Well, that's what Hawking says. Stephen Hawking says, you
now you're beginning to see the flow, and this is all coming out before a certain date called 2012, is it not?
Yeah, that's true. What else is going on in your life?
Well, there's a huge amount of stuff going on. Friday, AOL is publishing a major story on us and our moon research, which, among other things, features Captain Ed Mitchell.
Super. Who did it? Larry Spiegel?
Larry Spiegel.
Good guy.
He's the same guy who's doing yours, right?
Yep.
I figured. Yeah, Larry is really trying to fly by the straight and narrow here, although it's not totally in his control. The editors took control of it. But they're going to post it Friday, which means it'll be up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So all the Coast audience that want to go and see, they're publishing something like a dozen pictures that I specially prepared of the artifacts on the moon. Most interestingly, the artifacts leaked to us by the Obama guys a year ago in October when La Crosse crashed into the South Pole and photographed this amazing set of geometric structures down through the layers that we got released by NASA, you know, within a day or two after the event. Where this all comes full circle is that a few days ago, almost on the year anniversary, NASA held another La Crosse press conference. And as you know, George, they announced with great fanfare, oh, we found a huge amount of water. And if we calculate the amount in this crater, KBS alone, it was 1 billion gallons, right?
Yeah.
What you don't know is that in the science issue this week, where they published these six papers on the La Crosse mission, they found a whole bunch of other totally bizarre stuff in this impact that should not be on the moon, including, get this, as much liquid mercury as there was water kicked up by the impact. Let me repeat that. As much liquid mercury, a heavy metal, a metal used in all kinds of astonishing technological things, including, if you read Joseph Farrell's work, the Nazi Bell, and if you read the ancient Indian work, the Vedas, the Vimanas. In other words, George, it's my theory, my analysis, that they have confirmed and disclosed the background to an ancient technological civilization on the moon. And you can see the photographs that go with the story on AOL all this weekend.
Super. And I'm sure you'll have a link at enterprisemission.com. Thank you, Richard. A U.S. researcher says he plans to electronically record and interpret dreams. What a story. Writing in the journal Nature, scientists say they have developed a system of capable of recording higher-level brain activity. The scientist, Dr. Moran Cerf, says he really wants to read people's dreams. The aim is not to interlope, he says, but to expand our understanding of how and why people dream. For centuries, people have been fascinated by dreams, what they mean. In ancient Egypt, they were thought to be messages from God. And more recently, dream analysis has been used by psychologists as a tool to understand the unconscious mind. But the only way to interpret dreams is to simply ask people about the subject of their dreams after they have woken up. That may all change. As we continue with our Halloween week, up next, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, the Encyclopedia of Demons and Demonology, Ghosts and Spirits, Vampires, Werewolves. She does it all. Rosemary's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, a leading expert on the paranormal. She's researched, investigated, and written about the paranormal since 1983. I'm collaborating on a book with Rosemary now. Her extensive field work investigates hauntings, mysteries, sacred places as well. She writes for Fate Magazine and TAPS Para Magazine as well. Here she is, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Rosemary, how are you?
Hi, George. I'm doing good. This is a busy time of the year for me. It always is right around Halloween. I'm out on a lot of campuses, and tonight I'm in Des Moines, Iowa.
Des Moines. I love Des Moines. But you love this, too, don't you? You love talking about these spooky things.
I do. I love giving people information about the real thing out there. The campuses are great because the students are so interested in the paranormal. And I think we need to be better acquainted with the things that are in these other dimensions that we coexist with in our space. We have encounters all the time around the planet, and they're not our imagination. They're real experiences.
Rosemary, you've done a lot of work on our work talking to the dead. Have you changed your thoughts or views on ghosts in hauntings?
I certainly have over the years, George, as I've done so many investigations. I think that what we call a haunting by a ghost, who's a person who has passed on, is most likely to be what's called a residual haunting. That is something that's kind of imprinted in psychic space. It's the ghost who does something over and over again in a repetitive way. It doesn't really interact with us too much. The hauntings where we have presences that interact with people by causing disturbances in a household, I believe are caused by non-human entities now, and I think some of them masquerade as people. They'd like us to think that they're ghosts of people who've passed on, but actually I think that they are some of these ultra-terrestrials from other dimensions.
Why does it seem that paranormal activity is more prevalent between 3 a.m. and dawn?
We're certainly more vulnerable at that time. Most of us are asleep. And I think that we have periods in our sleep cycle where these entities can have better access to us. They may be able to lock on to brainwave patterns or something in our consciousness, or perhaps they know that we're just not active and aware and at our best defense. And we get a lot of bedroom visits at that time between 3 a.m. and dawn, especially 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. And they're often terrifying experiences for people. it's easier for them to have an impact on us when we're in the dark, we feel vulnerable, and we're not really at our best. During the daytime, we've got preoccupations going on. We're out in the world. We're engaged with everything around us, and I think that increases our natural buffer against these doorways between our dimension and other dimensions.
And you're convinced hauntings and paranormal experiences are on the rise?
I am. I think some of it is a case of increased reporting because we've got more people focused on the paranormal now than we have had in the past. But I also think that these things are on the rise. Part of it is the focus of our attention. We think about something more and it seems to invite more opportunities. But I also think that we've got things going on in our physical space that are activating a lot of these pathways and doorways. A solar flare activity that stirs up the Earth's magnetosphere may have something to do with how often and how well these interdimensional portals open.
I got to ask you, by the way, I got a picture. Was that you with vampire teeth?
Yes, it was.
Tom sent that to me, and I went, that's not rosemary, but it was. Huh?
I got fanged, yes.
Yes, you did. Not permanently, I trust, right?
No, but they're sharp little devils.
Yeah. Some people actually go to the dentist, and they get them permanently installed. Did you know that?
They do, and a lot of them wind up having them de-installed because it's extremely difficult to eat with them. In fact, the cap
I would
that
think
I have...
So.
Or sleep with them in, my gosh. But the caps that I have, they were made by Father Sebastian, who's one of the early persons who helped to organize the vampire subculture. John Zaffis and I spent a day with him talking about the vampire subculture for the next edition of my vampire encyclopedia. And he made our teeth for us. They're out of real dental material that dentists use for temporary crowns, and he molds them to your mouth and files them down to very sharp.
My gosh.
And you can just pop them in and out. But it is a little hard to talk with them, and you're not really supposed to eat with them because, they could fall out or you could break.
Swallow them, maybe?
Swallow them, and that's especially why you shouldn't sleep with them.
I just got some for a friend of mine who looks like Dracula. He lives in St. Louis. His name's Peter. He's listening right now, I'm sure. And I ordered him from Billy Bob, the dentist who quit his job, his dentistry, and now he makes these teeth, much like your guy. And that's what he does for his business. They're called Billy Bob now. And so I sent him a pair for Halloween, and I'm sure he's going to wear it. But I'm telling you, Rosemary, if you could look at Dracula live, it would be Peter. He looks just like him.
That's wild.
Anyway, when you go out, you're a pretty tough person. Do you ever get scared on any of these probes?
I do. You know, I've never run screaming from a place, but I have made prudent exits from time to time. I've been spending an increasing amount of time going into negative, what we call negative haunting situations, where people are very disturbed in a location or it's out somewhere where there's a lot of unusual phenomena. That's very intense. And there are entities, I think, who come into our world who are not very kindly disposed toward us. Some of them may be demonic. Some of them may be ET or of unknown origin. I've done research, you know, focusing on the jinn for several years, and I think that they're responsible for some of these negative hauntings. And every now and then you run up against something that is so powerful and so hostile and has the upper hand because it can shape shift and do things that you can't, and it can see you and you can't always see it. And sometimes you just have to know when to fold them or hold them, and it's better to fold them.
Absolutely. Is ghost hunting a serious business? I mean, if some people go out just to have a good time, is that dangerous?
Well, there's nothing wrong with going out for a thrill and having a good time. I think all of us in the paranormal have done that, and I certainly have. But if people are serious about it and they want to do it on a regular basis, it's not a thrill pursuit. It's very intense. There are a lot of things out there, and people can become psychologically destabilized and sometimes quite easily by what they encounter. I do believe that these are real entities out there, and we need to treat them with a great deal of respect. So it's a good idea to get some grounding with some education, to talk to people who are experienced, to enter into the field gradually. I really don't like the things that are portrayed on some of these shows where people go out and scream at ghosts to, you know, do something terrible. That's the wrong way to approach
paranormal. Well, it sure is. Rosemary, we're going to come back, talk with you more about this, and take some phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your phone calls with Rosemary Ellen Guiley this hour now, your stories as well. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us, and your phone calls as well. What besides ghosts create hauntings, Rosemary?
Just about any of the entities that we have in our folklore and mythology can create a haunting situation. We have mysterious creatures of unknown origins, things that seem like animals but not animals we know, or they're part, seem to be part human and part animal. Fairies, elementals, trolls, the djinn create a lot of hauntings, demons. Even ETs can stir things up. I've encountered a lot of these things. I think that when people go out and do paranormal investigation, they don't realize that there's a lot out there besides what we might think are human apparitions creating a lot of problems for us.
Well, that's so true. West of the Rockies, Fred in Canyon City, Colorado. Hi, Fred. Go ahead.
Yeah, I used to live in 1978. I used to live on a little old farmhouse in Lopez Island, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely haunted, but they're really good, I guess, called ghosts or spirits. They would we'd leave the house and come back after night, and they'd leave the porch light on for us. You could hear them walking around upstairs at about 8 o'clock at night. You could hear them walking to, you know, tuck the kids in bed. They'd leave the doors open. I ran up there one night, and my girlfriend at the time goes, "What are you doing?" I go, "Whoa, heard something up there." "Oh, it's just ghosts." I went up there, and there was probably a 16th inch of dust up there and no tracks. So I went up, and I closed all the doors, pulled them tight. And I went back downstairs, and she goes, "You closed the doors." I go, "Yeah, I did." And she goes, "Well, you're just going to open them up again." I could hear them walking up again. I went back up. Only tracks up there were mine. We'd leave the windows open, and it would start to rain. It's Washington. And I go, "Oh, we got to go close windows." And all the locals and the friends and stuff, they go, "Ah, the ghost will get it." And they would. They'd open and close the windows. One time I left, and I know I left the teapot on the stove, and the stove was on. We drove. We got, maybe a quarter mile. Like, "Oh, my God, I left the stove on." And my girlfriend, Karen, she goes, "Oh, don't worry about it. The ghost will get it." So I had to turn around, and I went back, and I know it was on and everything else. And they had turned it off and pulled the teapot off. Put it on a trivet, and the locals all accepted it. It's just incredible.
They were out to watch your backside. That's for sure, Fred. How can they physically move objects, Rosemary?
Well, we don't really know how they manage the energy to manipulate things in our physical space, but these are quite common occurrences in hauntings, especially real active ones. We hear the footsteps. The objects get moved around inexplicably. Things appear and disappear. They get relocated. They can make sounds, and they can create sensations that we feel resemble somebody touching us or tugging on us, pulling us, that sort of thing. And these are very common experiences. The footsteps and sounds of things being dragged around and the misplacement of objects. It's like there are these invisible tricksters who want to create a certain amount of chaos and upset. And sometimes that's all they like to do without any apparent reason other than just to keep us off balance.
We have ghosts and we have demons. To me, that sounds like they're on the same plane of existence. Is that true?
I don't think so. I think that they come from other realms. A ghost that's truly a ghost of a human being who's died, I think, is an imprint left in psychic space. It's something that gets left behind, like a photograph or a video imprinted in psychic space. And other entities like demons, djinn, the fairies, the ETs, the shadow people, I think they come from other dimensions through openings or portals that tunnel into our reality.
All right, next up we go to Robert in Kansas City, Missouri, first-time caller. Hello, Robert. Good morning.
Good morning. Great show tonight.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, a lot of people are running around out there thinking they're demonologists, but unfortunately, you know, when Jesus casted out demons, he had authority to do it, and that was, you know, a really scary event, and the apostles had authority from God. But I think, you know, a lot of people just think they have some type of authority, and they don't, and it's a very dangerous perspective, and especially here in the United States, people chasing ghosts and demons and so forth, they really don't stand a chance from these higher beings unless they have authority, and I'd like you to comment about that.
That's a good point, Rosemary. What do you think?
There are a lot of people who have taken up the mantle of demonology without much knowledge of what's involved in the field. Well, exorcisms have been conducted by people worldwide since ancient times. All kinds of people have had the ability to do so. And actually, in the early days of Christianity, all Christian converts were called upon to do this sort of thing. So I think that what it takes to be a good demonologist is someone who has the ability to attune to these invisible realms and these entities and to have the skills and the knowledge to do something to get them out of a place.
You don't all have to be ordained by the Catholic Church to do this.
I don't believe so. The Catholics certainly have procedures to follow for demonic problems. So do other faiths. There are deliverance ministers, shamans. The Buddhists have procedures for these things. There are magical procedures for people involved in Wicca and some of the magical paths. So we have a variety of approaches for dealing with negative entities. The thing is that if you're going to get into that area, you need to have some training and skill and experience to do it effectively.
Text message in for you. John from Rossmore, California, wants to know what determines if a ghost or spirit happens to be nice or not when haunting a house. Well, I think that's obvious, don't you?
If it does nasty things, then
it's not nice.
It's not nice. If it strikes out against you, but, you know, everybody has a different threshold of what upsets them. And sometimes just a simple trickster-like sort of thing could upset one person very, very much and just kind of mildly annoy or even entertain somebody else.
Well, you know, as you look at some of these things, there's also the mischievous ghost, right? The one who just wants to be a prankster?
Yes, and sometimes I think that we're dealing with other entities here again, that they may not be the ghosts of human dead. They may be something like fairies who have a reputation for tricksters. The djinn have a reputation for that as well. And there are probably some entities, ultra-terrestrials of unknown origin, that like to do that as well.
What was the guy before? This was before your time. You don't remember Superman comics, do you?
Can I confess? I read comics when I was a kid. And some of them,
I don't know if you're right. I think you're a little too young for that. But there was a prankster who would always try to get Superman, but Superman had to pronounce his name or something. You know, it was a long, long name, like Mr. Rubble Wubble Wubble or something like that. But he was a prankster. He reminded me of a prankster ghost. He wasn't a ghost, but he reminded me of that. East of the Rockies, Pat in Toronto, California. You're up with us. Hey, Pat, go ahead.
Hi, George. I appreciate coming on the show. I've been listening to the show for 5 years and never gotten on. Finally got on, so I appreciate it.
All right, you must be listening on XM because they give the East of the Rockies number, right?
I guess it's, East of the 1-800 number.
Okay, that's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question for Rosemary about spirits. I keep having friends and family and different people tell me they've had past experience of hauntings. I've never experienced anything like that. Do spirits attach themselves to certain people and just can't be bothered with others, or how does that work?
Some people are more vulnerable to interaction with other dimensional entities. They have thinner boundaries. I think we all have a buffer in our aura that keeps these things out of our sphere. But some people have thinner boundaries than others, and it's easier for these entities to get in and get attention. The more you spend time investigating the paranormal and being engaged with it, the more likely you are to have experiences too. And sometimes I see people who go out on a ghost hunt and they really want a big thrill, and they invite it. They literally ask for something to come and pester them. And there are lots of entities out there who are very happy to oblige, and some of them may follow you home.
So in other words, if you can't be bothered with them, most likely they won't be bothered with you, in other words.
There are a lot of people who really don't go looking for any sort of paranormal engagement, and yet if you move into a house that's very, very haunted, that sits in one of these interdimensional opening areas, you could have plenty of activity on your hands without asking for it.
Okay, good luck to you. Let's go to Deb in Fairfield, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Deb, go ahead.
Hey there, George. How you doing?
I'm doing
God bless
good.
Both of you. It's really an honor to speak with both of you. I'm calling because I've noticed in the last 15 years that if someone passes away that I knew really, really well, that they would come and visit. And most recently, on Saturday night, one of our friends was murdered, but at the here in California at the Napa Mental Health Facility there in Napa, one of our friends was murdered by one of the inmates. And my cousin, Roberle, has been noting that Donna is all around her. And it's exciting and sad, very sad. But I think that's really common. It happened to me in 1998 when one of my, you know, the great loves of my life, that sort of deal, you know, died 20 years later. Then he was with me for 10 days in my apartment in Oakland. It was very strange and wonderful and sad all at the same time. How common is that?
It's far more common than most people realize, visits from the dead. I think that there's this liminal period between life and transition to the afterlife where a lot of these visits are made possible. And the longer time that goes by after someone has died, the harder it is for that connection to remain. However, some people do feel for even years the presence of a loved one, although the dramatic phenomena associated with that presence tends to lessen. And I think that people who've passed over often want to reassure those they've left behind that they're all right. And they can find these interdimensional pathways to us. But for reasons we don't understand, these openings usually are temporary and they close after a period of time.
Rosemary, in our research for Talking to the Dead, you did an extraordinary amount of work into the type of devices that are out there that are being used. Do they or are they constantly being perfected? Is technology changing so much that they get better and better?
It is, George, and I think that we are going to have something probably in our lifetimes. I'm going to make that prediction that we're going to have something that's going to give us verifiable evidence of communication with the other side, and it's going to be in probably voice first and a picture or image after that. A lot of these devices are still in very primitive stages, but they yield astonishing results. You know, I've done a lot of research, and we focus on that in the book, Talking to the Dead, with these ghost box devices that use radio sweep to form that link. And people are constantly tinkering with the technology. I'm very excited about it because we're going to get that evidence that's going to link us with the other side on demand, and we'll be able to learn some astonishing things. I'm very convinced of that.
Super. Lincoln, Nebraska. James, first-time caller. Hey, James, go ahead. You're on with Rosemary.
Thank you, George.
Mm-hmm.
I live in an older building, and it's like when I craft, a door always pops open. And it's a comforting feeling, but it only happens when I'm doing like crafts or something. And then it was like a couple nights ago, I was sleeping and I woke up and I tried moving and I couldn't move at all.
Sleep paralysis sometimes.
That's what I thought. Is that possible? Because I don't know if they're open up the window, but the window is open.
There are two things that happen. One, it's bona fide sleep paralysis. This happens to you. A lot of people have this. It's between sleeping and waking. They're trapped. They can't move. I don't think their brain is communicating with their body, so they have this feeling of just being there. But then there's this incredible phenomenon of like the old hag syndrome where you're trapped as well. Rosemary, did you ever come across that, the old hag syndrome?
All the time, where people feel that there's an ugly, horrible presence in the room, and they can't move. They're paralyzed. They can't do anything about it. It may circle the bed, or even they feel that it might get on top of them and press down on them. It's also associated with shadow people experiences and sometimes with entity sexual assault experiences. And two things may be going on here. We do have the natural sleep paralysis that occurs when we sleep. So there may be entities who take advantage of those periods in order to make their bedroom visitations, or they may actually have the ability to cause that condition when they come and assault us.
What's on your plate for Halloween night?
Halloween night, very exciting. I'm actually going to be in Salem, Massachusetts.
Ooh, working or playing?
Well, a little bit of both. I'm going to be participating in the Witches' Ritual for the Dead at Salem Common. This is being organized by Christian Day and Lori Bruno, two witches that I work with in a lot of activities.
We know Salem. Christian. He's been on the show before.
He has indeed. And I'm working with Christian on some writing projects on some witchy topics. This ritual is going to be for honoring the dead and for inviting them to be present. That's a tradition on Halloween.
And what's new with you on Visionary Living? We continue to send people your way to help them with their dreams, Rosemary.
I get a lot of inquiries about dreams. They're a very important component to our paranormal experience. And I'm getting ready for the launch of the Djinn book that Phil Imbrogno and I did, The Vengeful Djinn.
Great.
That's coming out in March. I have a book on the ghosts and hauntings of Salem coming out in April. New vampire book in June. And very excited about our book, Talking with the Dead, which will be out in the fall. So it's going to be a very busy year for me.
Absolutely. Well, you're a hard worker, Rosemary. Have a great time during the Halloween season, all right?
Thank you, and you too, George.
I mean, I can't believe how quickly this year's going by. By the way, don't forget, Sunday morning, not this Sunday, but a week from now, November 7th, that's spring ahead, fall back. So you turn your clocks back an hour a week from this Sunday. We'll be back.